Developing Powerful Interviewing Skills is the subject of this session. In it, you'll learn more about the power of the integrity selling interview step, and you'll learn about five types of interview questions. In a needs-focused selling system, the interview step is the most important one. Not only do you find out what people's wants or needs really are, but in this step, more selling takes place than in any other, although it appears that no selling is taking place at all. And now, here's Ron Willingham.
One of my good friends, a very successful life insurance agency manager, and a great student of integrity selling, tells his agents repeatedly, "The sale is made in the fact-finding interview." And you know he's right. The sale is largely made when the interview step is done well. As we think about this, let me emphasize that integrity selling redefines what sales persuasion is. In old-fashioned product-focused selling, the objective was to powerfully present product or service features and benefits, dominating the talking, and persuade people to buy. Persuasion was largely a process of convincing people that our products were good and then talk them into buying. Most sales training was either product training or strategies to help arm salespeople with verbal skills to convince people to buy whatever they're selling. Since most of this was strategy-based, it gave way to all sorts of ploys and manipulative devices. Tricky demonstration techniques and such terms as nail-downs and tie-downs and how to overcome stalls and objections were taught to salespeople. Again, the theory was that if salespeople were strong enough, had enough enthusiasm, or knew enough tricky strategies, that they could convince someone to buy what they're selling. They were also taught to play negotiation games with people. This selling style actually pitted the salesperson against the customer or client, creating a chess game where at least supposedly the strongest person wins. In this kind of selling, several very important elements suffer. For instance, trust is never fully established. Customers feel defensive, on guard, and don't give accurate information to people. Salespeople's call reluctance and fear of rejection intensifies. Self-esteem and feeling of professionalism erodes. And in many cases, this type of selling forces the price to be the main issue rather than customer value. What we know is that when trust, confidence, and rapport are established up front, that concern for price is almost always reduced at the back end. Said another way, when no trust and rapport is established front end, price becomes a much greater issue at the back end. In recent years, as times got tougher and competition increased, salespeople discovered that old-fashioned manipulative selling was working less and less. This discovery caused many organizations to seek out better ways to sell. As sales trainers, we've done the same thing. So as we look for better ways, we began to try to learn more about persuasion from a psychological standpoint. And since then, we've learned a lot. As far back as the 50s, Dr. Thomas Gordon, speaking before the National Sales Executives Convention in Los Angeles, said that traditionally we've been led to accept the common notion that the best way to influence or to change people is to communicate something to them, to tell them, advise them, suggest to them, appeal to them, teach them, or to persuade them. And then he went on, recent psychological research studies have turned up evidence that casts considerable doubt on the validity of this approach. The approach that appears to be far more effective in influencing or changing people is to encourage them to communicate to you, to express their opinions and ideas, verbalize their needs and complaints, talk out their problems and deep feelings, to discuss their resistance to change. And then he summarized his thoughts by saying, "It is possible that sales executives may now have to revise some of the traditional methods of motivating and training salespeople, perhaps even revising some of the commonly accepted theories of the selling process itself." Well, that was in the late 1950s, at the beginning of a powerful revolution that has indeed changed our concept of the selling process. And integrity selling has led the way in this revolution. It has redefined what selling is, as well as given people a step-by-step process to do needs-focused selling. Today we see selling and persuasion as a process of gaining rapport and trust with people, as demonstrating a genuine concern for their needs, sincerely wanting to create the most value for them, and taking the time to genuinely understand their needs or wants. Today we define selling as a process of identifying and filling people's needs. We now know that persuasion is strongest when we ask questions, when we solicit opinions, when we genuinely want to understand customer needs, feelings, and fears. We now know that we can listen people into buying much more effectively than we can talk them into it. We know that people are instinctively influenced by our attitudes of sincerity and genuine interest in them. If you understand all this, you'll better understand the power of the interview step in the integrity selling process. You'll also understand that while an entry-level salesperson can accelerate his or her sales almost immediately by doing the 8 ink step, that the most seasoned veteran can still find new levels of understanding of how to apply it. It's broad enough to fit many levels of salespeople. Well, with these concepts in mind, let's talk about some interviewing ideas that can help you move to a new level of sales performance. It's easy to have an elementary knowledge of the interview step so that we see it as a process of simply getting information that helps us understand people's needs. So we do surface interviewing, just enough questioning so that we have a basis on which to make a sales presentation. It's later, though, as we attempt to close, that we often discover there are still objections or concerns or other factors that are blocking a decision. It's here we discover that we didn't do a thorough interview. We thought we did, but we didn't. And so as we learn more, we discover that people have several different levels of needs. We learn that there are several dimensions that have to be dealt with in order to make sales. There are several obvious and not so obvious considerations that can block a person's decision making. Here are some different dimensions that we may have to deal with. One, people's obvious needs for the product or service that we have. Two, ego needs of the decision makers. Three, personal needs of people who indirectly impact or influence decisions. Four, fear or concern needs that might silently block a sale. Five, payoff needs of different people, the rewards or recognition that different people want personally. Six, the end result benefit needs that people have, what people would want to happen if they bought from you. Seven, the consequences that could happen when people buy from you. Eight, the consequences of delaying decisions. Number nine, what they perceive the rewards of delaying their decisions are. And number 10, how people will measure their satisfaction level after the purchase. Now, you'll not remember all these questions or areas. I mention them now to expand your thinking and understanding of some indirect and not so obvious levels of concerns people have that eventually influence their purchase decisions. In your worksheets that will be handed out to you after this message finishes is a listing of different types of information that may need to be gathered in an effective interview. The types are: Type 1, general information questions. This is basic information you need to have before you can understand what people's product or service needs are. It's at the point of getting this that most salespeople quit interviewing, though. Type 2, intended application questions. Here you find out what people are using now, what use or function their desired product or service is to perform, and how they plan to use it. Type 3, people involved questions. In finding out this information, you directly or indirectly understand who will be involved in either implementing or deciding on your product or service. You want to clearly understand who they are, what results they expect to happen, and their ego or political positions. Type 4, the desired results or benefit questions. Here you get clarification of the desired benefits people want as they select products or services. You also want to know how they'll measure the benefits and what proof of benefits they'll need to make a decision. Type 5, the risk or fear questions. These are the questions that help you subtly identify the perceived risk or fears that different people have. You'll also want to understand what risk or cost they think they'll encounter if they don't buy from you. You'll want to know whether they're motivated by security or results as they make decisions. Remember, Decisions almost always involve risk or cost to people. People will buy if they perceive the rewards they want outweigh the cost. They won't if they aren't sure. After your sales meeting session today, take the handout worksheets and study them carefully. Really dig into the questions. Design your own specific questions. Make notes that will help you ask them in real situations with people. As you practice these questions and carefully observe the responses you get, you'll begin to develop greater skills in interviewing. You'll also begin to notice your sales going up. It's been my observation that intelligence and professionalism are demonstrated more in the kinds of questions that we ask than just about anything else. Being astute enough to ask the right question that hits customers at their own experience and intellectual levels takes practice, dedication to learning, and experience, but it pays off big in sales and income. Effective interviewing questions can also help people discover they have needs when they never thought of them before. With sharply focused, on-target questions, you can not only get people discovering their needs, but also verbalizing them, thereby selling themselves. The more skilled and knowledgeable you are, the more your questions will cause people to talk about their needs. Then as they verbalize the rewards they'd enjoy if the needs they admitted to having were satisfied, they begin to sell themselves. Once you help people verbalize needs and visualize end result benefits or rewards that they'll enjoy, they'll begin to buy into your solutions. Well, so far I've bombarded you with lots of information, certainly too much to remember, and probably too much to easily assimilate and apply. So pick out what you can begin using now. Practice it and continue to learn. Now, let me change the subject just a bit as I near the end of this message and talk more about the psychology of persuasion. I've said that most sales presentations are too one-sided. They're dominated too much by a salesperson talking and customers or prospects passively listening. Great salespeople have learned to create social interaction, to set up a situation of give and take. They know to make the sales contact a two-way street of asking questions, listening, and giving reinforcement to people as they listen. They know to ask questions, to solicit opinions, and then to carefully listen, sincerely wanting to understand people's needs. As they listen, they intuitively give feedback to people. They make rewarding remarks or nod approval. They smile and signify agreement at appropriate times. They paraphrase back to people key points that they hear them make. They know, because it's important to remember, to make notes and write down information that they hear. They give positive feedback and reinforcement to people as they listen. When salespeople focus on creating value, their inner motives or feelings are communicated subconsciously to customers. And then the customers respond to salespeople in positive ways, subconsciously wanting to give value back to them. We call this the law of psychological reciprocity. It simply means that when we sincerely give value to people, either psychological or tangible value, that they're instinctively compelled to reciprocate in kind. They want to give back to us the same feelings, attitudes, and emotions that we gave them. As this law of psychological reciprocity escalates and intensifies, relationships are strengthened, and a spirit of partnering between buyer and seller begins to take place. It's on this basis that trust relationships are formed and sustained. The ultimate result of all this is that when we give people what they want, that is, listening and understanding and a genuine interest in creating value for them, they are instinctively impelled to give us what we want, their business. When we give extra value to people that they didn't expect, it causes them to give us more business. Understand this and you'll understand how highly successful salespeople got that way. You'll also understand why so much selling takes place in the interview step. And so as you learn more about the power of the interview step, and as you become more skilled at asking the right questions, your sales, income, and customer satisfaction will go up.